From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, out of the office for the afternoon, so no update of the commodity markets. However, we will talk about perennial grasses and their use in the farm landscape. Have you really considered what a perennial grass might do on your farm? It could be that there's a place for it, and we'll discuss that with a couple of folks. Emily Heaton is from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, and Ruth McCabe is with Heartland Co-op out of Iowa. The two of them have been working on how to incorporate these kinds of grasses into the farm landscape for both erosion control and profit. We'll hear more about that in today's Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Today's Closing Market Report is an excerpt of the Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. You may find and listen to that podcast on our website at willag.org, willag.org. You'll have to go to the second page of the notes, scroll to the bottom of the page at willag.org and hit next page, and you'll be able to find that. On the way down, you'll find all kinds of information, including content from our daily agricultural programming, some updated agricultural news, and of course, information from the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences and University of Illinois Extension, all at willag.org. Today, we'll explore how perennial grasses of all kinds can be incorporated into the landscape and the farm. We'll begin by talking with Professor of Regenerative Agriculture in the Department of Crop Sciences at the University of Illinois, Emily Heaton. I asked her to tell me a little bit about herself.
Well, my name is Emily Heaton, and I'm a Professor of Regenerative Agriculture in the Crop Sciences Department at the University of Illinois. And I work a lot on perennial biomass crops, which I think we're going to talk about today. But those fit under a larger umbrella in my program of what we call regenerative agriculture, which is maybe a topic for another day, but it's essentially making sure that we farm in such a way that we regenerate the resources on which our livelihoods and our communities depend. You know, good soil, clean water, healthy people.
Tell me a little bit more about the background, what you did maybe at Iowa State, what kind of projects you've been involved in, so you get an idea of where we're headed here at Illinois.
Yeah, sure. So I spent 12 years at Iowa State University in the agronomy department, and I'm actually still an affiliate professor of agronomy at Iowa State. So part of what I did there was help develop a biomass program. So I was an extension biomass specialist as well as a research and teaching faculty member. And we were pretty successful at figuring out where to incorporate perennials into row crop systems to improve the overall performance of that farm. So finding places where maybe the row crops weren't making as much money as they should, and finding ways to strategically insert perennials into those underperforming areas of field to improve water quality, improve soil quality, but, you know, perhaps most importantly, at the same time, improving the economic performance as a whole for that field.
Can you define biomass for me, please?
Yes, I would love to define biomass. So first of all, let's just remember that agriculture produces more than food, right? So in agriculture, our job is to harvest the sun. We take sunlight energy and get it converted with cooperation from plants into forms of carbon that we want to use. So that includes food, but it also includes fuel and fiber. And then increasingly, it just includes stuff. For the last 50 or 100 years, we've been using a lot of stuff made out of fossil fuels. But we're going back to a more contemporary carbon economy. So having biomass crops, that biomass can be used for a variety of purposes. And we'll talk about some of those today. But you know, if you think about bamboo towels, or maybe you've had flooring made from different renewable materials, or you've seen disposable plates and cups that are now made from paper or increasingly graph paper products to replace styrofoam. Those are all things made out of biomass crops.
So today we're wanting to talk about grasses on the farm, but of course we already have them in the farm rotation, generally speaking, in the form of both corn and wheat. Why then perennial grasses?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first of all, thanks for recognizing that corn is a grass. Sometimes that gets forgotten. But I think that the way I view, kind of a high-functioning Midwestern landscape has corn and soy that are complemented by strategically placed plantings of perennials. And so let me tell you a little bit of what I mean about that. We know that the way we have corn and soy distributed on our landscape today, that is completely covering our landscape. Sometimes it's up to 95% of non-water land area in the Midwest is in row crops. That's too much to support clean water and healthy soils. We've found that the paradigm of farming fence row to fence row is failing in a lot of ways. But strategically incorporating perennials into the landscape, like, frankly, we used to have just even 50 short years ago, there was a little bit more pasture, small grains, as you mentioned. Those provide complementarity to those corn soy systems. So that, if water or nutrients leave a field, there's a growing, actively growing perennial plant nearby that can suck up that water and the nitrogen that's in it, for example. Obviously, we would rather keep our nutrients in the field where the crop can use them. But should they leave, if we plant buffers in intelligent ways around our row crop landscape, it helps the whole landscape operate at a higher level. And then we can grow an extra crop, right? We get some perennial biomass that grows at times of year where that corn and soy doesn't grow and allows us to sell into different markets than we can with that corn and soy.
Given all that, it's the economics of this that makes a difference to producers because, of course, they're used to thinking about waterways, maybe some buffer zones. They're not used to thinking about the ability of using those as a cash crop in some way. There needs to be a marketplace, and in order for that to happen, there has to be a use. And perennial grasses seems, for most people, I would think, not to be something that we would find a marketplace for, although I think you'd argue the other way around.
Yeah, I think the marketplaces are developing for perennial grasses, and they're developing pretty rapidly right now. So, farmers are problem solvers, and perennial grasses are just one more tool in the toolbox. So what we've had in the last, 10 years, is an explosion of smaller markets that are now getting quite well established. So I'd like to tell you about a couple of those if you're interested.
You bet.
Okay, so what the market that I think is the nearest term today is the bedding market. And, here in Central Illinois, we have some confinement animal operations, but not a lot of poultry ones. However, there are a lot of poultry operations around the Midwest, and particularly in the Mid-Atlantic. Miscanthus is one plant that I work on. It's a tall perennial grass that chops up nicely into small pieces that look really similar to wood chips. And it grows really well in the Midwest. So Miscanthus chips has been taking the place of wood chips in poultry operations. And with the turkey and chicken aggregators have found that Miscanthus bedding is more absorbent. So they have they can go longer between times of changing the bedding, or they can keep changing bedding at the same rate and have healthier outcomes in the house. So lower ammonia levels in the house, which is better for both the birds and the employees that work there. And then they actually find that it improves the quality of poultry feet. And we might not think about it in this country, but chicken's feet are a valuable commodity in Asia. So it added a whole new product for some poultry producers that they can now sell feet in addition to the meat. And Iowa, I think, is a kind of an interesting example. Iowa is the nation's leading producer of both turkeys and eggs. And so I've been working with a company, a Miscanthus company, Agrotech, and then Tyson Foods to plant Miscanthus around turkey farms in Iowa. And it will be used for bedding, but then it will also help improve water quality for the local corn soy farmers. So there, it's part of an integrated, a vertically integrated operation for some of the big farmers in that area, and provides a cheaper, higher quality bedding source and a local bedding source for Tyson. So that's one of those sort of win-win situations. And now we have people saying, hey, if you're using that for turkey bedding, but I know you can also grind Miss Kansas up and make paper products out of it. We have people saying, hey, we raise all the eggs in Iowa, but we could also raise the egg cartons. So all of a sudden you start getting market the layer and vertically integrate quite nicely while also providing ecosystem services like carbon storage, water quality improvement.
If you're a producer, a landowner, how do you get involved? What's the process?
So that's a great question, Todd. The way I talk to anyone who's interested and they have land that they either manage or own, the first question is, what are your goals? What are your goals for that land? There's lots of things that we can do, but we want to do the thing that works best for your operation. And that usually looks pretty different for renters compared to owners and people at different stages of their career or, you know, succession planning. So one of the first things that you can do, whether you rent or own, is understand where in your operation you have room for improvement, both economically and environmentally. You know, are there places in your fields that you farm that you shouldn't? And you know you shouldn't, but you do it anyway because maybe those are difficult areas to work around or, you know, whatever reason, you're in a hurry, something else. Those might be areas of economic and environmental opportunity to try something different. I think until you know where you have room to make a different decision, there's not much point in trying to figure out how to incorporate perennials into your system. It's something that should be undertaken strategically with a system-wide perspective for your whole operation.
Tell me about some of the grass species that you might use and in different places in the farm. And I suppose maybe we could start with waterways.
Yeah, so waterways are a place that people are familiar with seeing grass on the farm. And I'm really glad you brought that up because the grass in the waterway performs a very specific function. The role of grass in the waterway is to help the water move. So a waterway grass needs to lay down, get out of the way for the water, and that's it, and then survive. That's the whole job of a waterway grass. And it needs to be managed for that purpose. The grasses that we grow for biomass and for water quality improvement provide a very different function on the landscape. The biomass grasses are stiff-stemmed. They don't lay down. They slow the flow of water. When they do that, the water moves slower and it drops a lot of the stuff that's in it. So if you're trying to keep soil on the landscape, if you're trying to keep phosphorus on the landscape, if you're trying to keep water on the landscape, just letting it percolate through. You know, you think of these times that we have, no rain all summer and then some sort of big gully washer. The stiff-stemmed biomass crops or the energy grasses will help the water actually stay on the field and move through slowly. Now, sometimes you don't want more water on your field. Oftentimes in the spring, we're trying to get rid of water. Those perennial grasses also help water move through the profile better. So their roots are big, their roots are long-lived and go deep, so it makes channels in the soil for the water to drain. So we tend to find that these perennial grasses improve soil organic matter, which improves water management in a field, water holding capacity. And they improve infiltration. So, and you can just drive on them. They literally provide something to drive on in wet spots of the field so that you don't sink a tractor. This is one of the largest reasons I've seen for adoption of perennial grasses in Northwest Iowa. It simply is something you can drive on in some of those really wet spots in the field that the tile drainage just can't fix. So waterways have their place, but it's a different place than a biomass crop.
That was Emily Heaton. She's a professor of regenerative agriculture in the Department of Crop Sciences on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You'll be able to contact her on campus anytime you'd like to talk more about grass species, particularly perennial grass species, and incorporating them in different ways into your farm. Conservation agronomist Ruth McCabe from Heartland Co-op out of Des Moines, Iowa, has been helping producers there to think about perennial grasses in some of those more rolling areas, even the flatland areas of Iowa. And I asked her first to tell me a little bit about what she does and what geographic area Heartland Co-op covers.
We span pretty much, if you took Iowa, split it into thirds. Our trade territory is the central horizontal third of Iowa, east to west. And I work with a lot of farmers and landowners in eastern Iowa, primarily. So working in eastern Iowa, I joke that I work with folks that are south of 20, north of 80, east of 35, all the way to the river, that whole chunk. And so my territory goes from relatively flat to rolling hills. And the further south I get to rolling clay soils. So I work with a lot of different soils, a lot of different slopes, everything from grain crops to animal operations and everything in between. Even got a dairy or two in there. So it's a broad span of growers and landowners that I work with.
On that note, I do have an agronomy question for you, which is what kind of advice on perennial grass seed mixtures do you give, and does it depend very much on geography and region?
Yes. Yeah, so actually my advice for, well, the first thing that I would do honestly isn't advice. It's not agronomic. It's more about feeling out expectations and opportunities, right? So as you know, agriculture can do pretty much anything we ask of it, and so at the end of the day, you really so to ask yourself what you want to do with it. So I feel like I'm basically here to help growers navigate their options to achieve their goals. So it's like being an investment advisor. I always say this, I am first assessing someone's risk tolerance, and then I offer them options that they can pick from. So, you know, what are your goals for growing perennial grasses? Do you want to grow them for bedding, forage, biofuels? How many acres? How aggressively do you want to have to market yourself? And once I can get a good feel for what a grower is looking for, then I can get more into the agronomic answer to your question. Like, well, do you want to grow a mixture or do you want to grow a monoculture, right? So like, for instance, species, popular monoculture perennial grasses that are grown for like biomass are things like switchgrass or reed canary grass or miscanthus or giant reed, you know, but then you can get into the native mixture side of things, which are popular for slightly different reasons. You know, and they're being explored as a source of perennial biomass as well. And those are things like switchgrass or Indian grass or prairie cordgrass. You know, and all of those species that I just mentioned grow just fine across Illinois. Obviously, many of them evolved actually to handle Midwest climate and prairie ecosystems. And, you know, things like topography isn't necessarily a concern for growing perennial grasses beyond the logistical difficulty of planting and harvesting them, right? But perennial grasses are great for slopes. So, you know, really the only agronomic concern I have for growing any perennial grass, regardless of what it is, whether you're growing a monoculture or a mixture and species, really is just wet or hydric soils. I think that's something sometimes folks think, hey, I have this place, it's got a seasonal wet spot, poor performing field otherwise, you know, I'll just grow some perennial grasses in that field, maybe sell them for biomass. Probably not going to have a lot of luck with that. If you've got an area that's like a seasonal wetland, you're probably not going to get a lot growing there. But otherwise, most perennial grass species grow just fine across Illinois, north to south. I haven't seen any issues with that. And then, you know, last but not least, I just also, when people are planting perennial grasses, especially native route, like the switchgrass, Indian grass, bluestem, that route, I encourage growers to really prepare for what I call like a no harvest or maybe even just, you know, single harvest first year or first 2 years, because you really want to let perennial grasses get off the ground in their first year or two of planting to build some good underground reserves before really aggressively harvesting them for their biomass. And of course, that comes down to when you're going to be harvesting. If you're harvesting for things like biofuels or feedstocks for like co-firing, you know, you're going to harvest after a hard frost anyway, so it doesn't matter. But if you're harvesting for things like forages or bedding, then you're going to be harvesting in season. And so if that's the case, then you might be wanting to wait a year or two before really getting out there and hitting it hard.
For farmers that are interested in doing this, what advice do you have about incorporating perennial grasses? And I'm thinking about miscanthus up front because that's hard to put in, if I remember correctly. Others may be easier, but that one's not easy.
Nope, it is not. Yeah. So my right off the cuff advice is, yeah, do your research, right? Learn about the species and the uses of it and the harvest timing, you know, because what are you putting in? Can you plant it with a planter? Is it rhizomes like miscanthus and it cannot be planted with a planter? You know, how are you going to get it in the ground? And what do you want to do with it? Do you want to harvest it for, you know, do you know of a local dairy that is willing to use your biomass for bedding? Is there a poultry farm nearby that'll use your biomass for their poultry barns? You know, can you explore those local small scale markets? For that matter, you know, learn about what processing might be needed. You know, are you going to have to be the one to flail that and chop it up and get it ready to go, or can somebody else process it? So these are all the kinds of questions that when people ask me, you know, hey, could I do this? Could I incorporate perennial grasses? Yes, but you know, you're really going to have to feel out what you're comfortable with managing and doing on your own. And then for that matter, you know, how comfortable are you selling yourself? You don't get what you don't ask for, but you sometimes have to get out there and hit the pavement to sell what you're trying to do, you know, and that can be hard when you're growing 4,000 acres of corn and beans on top of everything else. So that's like my off-the-cuff answer when it comes to advice for farmers who are interested in getting into perennial grasses. Then I start asking more questions like, again, coming back to goals. I mean, why are you really interested in doing this? Is it because you want to harvest this biomass and create another small-scale market, or do you just want to create some acreage for wildlife? As you said earlier, Todd, you just want to have this grass field. Then consider something like CRP, you know. There are other options for having perennial grasses other than just harvesting them if that's what you want, you know. And so it's like, again, feeling out those goals and figuring out what a grower or what a landowner wants when they're thinking about incorporating perennial grasses. To be fair, you know, the corn and bean industry can definitely be, you know, an unstable market with a narrow margin sometimes, right? And it can be high stress. So growing perennial grasses can be a way to buffer that, just like any other attempt to diversify your operation. But that adds a level of complexity in terms of how you're managing things. So again, it all comes down to assessing goals and risk tolerance.
Ruth McCabe is a conservation agronomist for Heartland Co-op. She works throughout the center part of the state of Iowa. Of course, you've been listening to an excerpt from the Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast, which you can find on our website at willag.org, willag.org. This is the Closing Market Report. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. Don't forget, on that same website, willag.org, you can find most of our daily agricultural programming in its entirety for you to listen to anytime you'd like on demand. Again, that's at willag.org. It is public radio for the farming world.